Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host and Team Canada supporter, Al McDonald. Al, you must be very happy today.
Absolutely. Big game, as I'm sure, depending on when people are listening to this, everyone's going to know about. So yeah, I figured I would rock the colors today.
Nice. Well, it looks good on you. And hopefully that's something that we continue to see in the future with Team Canada. Happy Friday, by the way. Happy Podcast Friday. We're thrilled to welcome Amna Koskin, founder and CEO of Pocket HR, to the podcast. Amna founded Pocket HR in 2024 with a bold mission to transform workplace cultures into spaces where both leadership and teams can genuinely thrive. As both an entrepreneur and a toddler mom, Amna understands the delicate work of work, life, and family, a perspective that fuels her passion for people-first, flexible workplaces. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here. And yeah, I'm really excited to share my story and also learn from you both. So thank you for having me.
Well, we had such a great conversation and I want as many people to hear what we talked about the first time because I think it was a fascinating story. Why don't we start at the beginning? Like, what can you tell us about Pocket HR?
So Pocket HR Consultancy Agency, I started it late last year. Really, I started it because I felt like when I joined HR about a decade and a bit ago, it was a bit old-fashioned. And the part that I loved about HR was like the innovation, the tech, the AI. Like, I wanted to change the game. And I found out of most departments, HR was a bit more resistant to change. And then as I learned and kind of grew my career, I decided, why not bring that mindset into companies that are open to that change? And why not be that person to drive that level of change for smaller businesses? And yeah, honestly, it was an overnight decision. So some people think about this years and years of thinking about the business. For me, it was talking to my husband at night, being like, I don't know what I want to do. And he's like, maybe this is the time you start your business. And I was like, right now, I'm a toddler mom. This is not the best time. I don't even know what I'm going to call it. Some people do like polls just to figure out the name of their business. I didn't even do that. I went online, started it, started selling. And before you know it, I built this business, which has been one of the best decisions I've ever done. So really, really happy about it.
You've got an interesting background, and getting to know you, I found that you've worked from some of these corporate, you know, giant firms, you've done startups, now you've overnight, you've created this firm. I'm always curious with people like yourself, like, what was the ultimate inspiration? You talked about having a toddler now, and maybe this isn't the best time. And then kind of as a follow-up, coming from that big world of corporate to where you are now and how you perceive culture, how's that evolved over time?
I think that was a big factor into my decision. So I, like many, it's not unusual. You know, I had a pretty classic upbringing where work ethic was everything at that time. My parents' career really shaped my perspective early on in terms of just at that time, they were working tirelessly. They really built like a deep ambition in me. So when I graduated, I was hoping, okay, I'll work in non-for-profit for a few years. And like, that's kind of where my heart was. But when that didn't pan out, I took a job at a recruitment agency. And that was like my first kind of step into working. It wasn't glamorous, you know, cold calling really terrified me, but it really forced me to build resilience. I would be calling random companies to be like, hey, can I close a job for you? You know, first give me the job and let me find you the person. And I didn't know how to even recruit. I didn't study HR, I studied psychology. But at that time, I was like, I got a job. You know, like, I have a job, dad, mom, like, we got there. I'm in, you know? But what set me apart was once I landed in HR, I started working in corporate giants like TELUS and Cineplex. And then I worked in smaller companies. And I really saw how HR transformed from a large company to small companies. And that was my goal. My goal was, like, I always wanted to know, is it the same? Like, I keep going to every company. Is it the same? Like, are we all operating in the same copy-paste cycle of, okay, performance review, okay, recruitment cycle, okay, these are the rules. Like, it's all standardized, right? And I think I just saw it differently where I think at that stage, I think it was around the 2017, 2018, when like that tech boom was happening. We were hiring so many developers. I remember that one year, I think I hired over 150 developers. I, to this day, think it was like, I don't know how I did it, but I needed technology to help me hire developers. Like, there's no way I could have done it on my own. And that's when I was pushing for experimentation and just different ways of thinking. And some businesses went for it and some businesses didn't, you know, like, it really depends on what type of mindset the leaders have in these businesses. And so all in all, what I realized is after experiencing all these companies, I really just wanted to bring a modern take to HR. I wanted to change the game. And I really had that desire after experiencing it at different companies. And you can go to like, it's funny, you can go to a tech startup and think that they're so modernized, they'll have a modern HR, but they might not, right? And then you can go to a large corporation that have legacy HR systems that have been around for years and years and years, but they might be like, I'm ready for a digital transformation. So you just can't tell. And I think that really excites me is let me talk to founders who have that drive. If they have that drive of doing a digital transformation across the IT side, the marketing side, the sales side, the customer success side, admin, all of that, why can't they have it on HR? You know, HR should be like the first one to adopt it, in my opinion, because like, it's easier than in the world of HR because we're going to do it all for internal employees rather than doing it externally. So that was kind of my thought process at that time.
Amina, I'd love to dive into something you said a little bit earlier, which was you said you started this. I'm sure it wasn't overnight. I'm sure you put some thought into it. But you also said that people sometimes think about it for a while. And we've had discussions before around sometimes a little bit of naivety is good when you're diving into this, because if you knew what you knew later on, you probably wouldn't go ahead. So can you just talk a little bit about jumping into it and what you found? And if you had to do it over again, would you do the same thing?
Honestly, that was a really good point. I think not knowing was a great decision. Don't get me wrong. It's very hard. Like, I don't know what I'm doing half the time and I'm learning it as I'm going. And I'm like, the other day I had to find an accountant. And the other day I was like, trying to figure out something like bringing a subcontractor on, all these different challenges. But you're right. There's part of me that knew that I wanted to start a business. Like that was deeply rooted in me. All my friends knew that I always had business ideas, whether it was a product, we'd be out, you know, at a bar. I'm like, this could be a business, or like, they should fix this up. And why do they do this? Like, this is a horrible user experience. We should change the user experience. And I'm not a product designer. I don't have that, but I'm always thinking about that. And so in a way, it wasn't overnight, but I think the idea of Pocket HR now looking back is I am really proud of myself of how fast I turned that around, because I think sometimes we think about it for too long. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about it, and then you're like, no, thank you. I don't want to do it. And I've done that many times with other things. Like I'm the queen of that sometimes, you know, but for something like this, and I think because I wasn't working full time and I really stopped all my, like there were no distractions, it helped me just go full force within a week. And within a week, I was able to get the website done, build, I call it my village of like family and friends and professionals and mentors who really have supported me and informing them that that's what I'm doing and getting incorporated, getting all the little pieces together. Originally, I was thinking of taking like a month or two off after working and just relaxing. And so it really went the other way. But I think if I was to tell somebody and somebody wants to start a business, is the best thing I did was just to kind of act fast. And there will be mistakes, but at the end of the day, you can change up your website later. Yep. You know, you can do all these like little things later. You can fix up your branding later. But once you get it out, the ball will start rolling and you have no choice.
Yep.
Like I got incorporated. I can't go back now. You know, like let me just try it and give it a shot.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about, because you've mentioned digital transformation and modernizing companies, how do you keep ahead? How do you keep ahead of the game, especially when things are changing so quickly? Like everything, you know, technology is new, AI is coming along. How do you stay ahead of the game?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's so interesting. I always ask this exact same question in interviews when I'm interviewing developers. So I totally understand that. For something like that, I get almost 80% of my inspiration by talking to people. And I think that is the core of it. Everyone, first of all, loves to talk about work. It's dinner table talk, party talk, birthday bars. We're all talking about our bosses. We're all talking about these things.
Oh, I talk about Al all the time.
Yeah, I'll probably talk about both of you when I'm going out tonight. You know, like you kind of have to. You have to, right? So, and you learn through those experiences. And so I always ask my friends, my families, my mentors, what tools are they using? Why are they using that? Why are they not using that? Oh, I just got into this HR technology. Oh, I don't know how I feel about video interviewing yet. And I think because I make it a point to connect to at least 7 to 10 people every month, whether they are professionals or they are people who've reached out to me for guidance and they've just, you know, arrived to Toronto and they were HR professionals back home in their own home country, I'm learning what it's like to be part of the HR community, whether you are in Canada or not. And I think that's how I'm getting a lot of my ideas. And of course, you can do the standard tactical things, conferences and pitch competitions. And I go to all those events because, again, like when you are a solo entrepreneur, you need to find ways to engage with people. And so I do it that way. But I think the one-on-one conversations where I get to actually ask them, like, are you part of this community? I didn't even know that existed. Like, can you get me into that community? And then going into that community and actually learning what value add they're giving me and how can I give the value add as well? And I think that has helped a lot. And of course, like my current clients are like, they have a breadth of knowledge. They're coming in with like their tech stack and I'm going in like, why did you choose this tech stack? And they'd say, oh, actually, like we don't have an HR person. So we need to streamline this as easy as possible. So, oh, I didn't think about it that way, right? Because I'm thinking about it from an HR perspective. They're thinking about it from a CEO, like an operations perspective. So that's where I get majority of my, I guess, ideas. And again, like I'm a millennial, so I do go onto like the social media, then I get funny clips from there about work humor and all the fun stuff that people are saying about tools. And it is bleeding onto that, like the technology, what's happening in the industry and whatnot. So that helps me connect with different generations. I think that's also very important to me is, and that's something hopefully we will discuss as well, is just the generational differences and understanding that and how I keep in touch with all of them because it is different. Everyone's in a different life stage. So understanding how HR runs across their different companies.
So when you get all these ideas from all these different people, which is great, but how do you sort through them? Like the impression I get, you got a lot of input coming in. And you only have so much time to sort through these things and say, okay, this is a really good tool. This one maybe won't work so well. How do you sort through all those ideas?
Honestly, this is the first thing I do is as soon as I get an idea, I go to my husband and I'm like, you won't believe what this company is doing. And like, for me, first of all, I'll get the validation because he is a developer. He's an engineer. So I'm getting it from his perspective too, right? So I guess I have an in where he'll be like, well, that doesn't make sense. I'm like, what? It makes sense for me. Like, this is an awesome tool. And so I get it. I do get that validation the more I discuss it. And then I actually also have like a toolkit that's a personalized toolkit for myself. Because again, with client work, as much as it is repetitive work, there are things that it's not always a one size fit all, right? So for example, one client is asking for, they want recognition. They're like, we're a team of 50. Everyone's not as happy. Like I want to do recognition. I don't know how. There are tools out there that support with recognition, right? But if they're using Microsoft Teams, this is just a really odd example. If they're using Microsoft Teams, I can't recommend a Slack add-on, right? Because that's not going to work there. So I actually have to think outside of the box and think about, okay, for Microsoft Teams, there aren't any add-ons. What are some other things that we can do that are not actually tech heavy? Because again, you're a not-for-profit. So you're not using your technology as much. Can we embed that into your town halls or your all hands or your cheat sheet that I always use and I keep it handy and I always write the ideas down? Because a lot of things I don't even know, right? Like now there's so many technologies out in the world of HR, like from gifting platforms, performance reviews, bonus platforms. We're talking payroll, like transparent payroll platforms where you can go in and just see what your pay bands are, right? And so there's just so many platforms, even salary benchmarking platforms. Yeah. Each of them have their own pros and cons. And I've learned that by using it over and over again. But some of them, even though they may seem inexpensive or too expensive, they might fit for one client versus the other. Right. And so it's just trying to figure out what the client needs and what would fit within my toolkit. And I just also, when you do talk to people who've moved, the one thing is talking to people who've moved from different areas of the world who just joined the Canadian workplace, you'll be amazed to see what type of tools they're using and how advanced they may be compared to maybe like the world that we're here, right?
Right.
We're probably just kind of rotating between the 5-6 tools in the month of February. And then in March, we'll have another 5-6 tools that we're rotating against. Yeah.
Amna, you mentioned earlier one of your clients that maybe you were chatting that, they were streamlining, it was too early for HR. I actually asked that question on LinkedIn yesterday. I said, looking back now, I question about, it took a long time to bring in HR. And the question I posed was, when's the right time for founders and new companies to bring in HR? A lot of the answers were sooner than you think, as soon as possible, immediately before you start making those hires. What would you say if I asked you that?
I saw that question that you asked, and it was funny because I also posted something earlier this week kind of telling people the different stages that they're in, like 0 to 50 people and then 50 to 100, yeah. Like what happens. So I'll tell you from my perspective, and I've been employee number 7 and employee 24 and then employee 46 as a first HR person. So definitely seen the differences. I think there's always a balance because if you are an organization that When I was employee number 24 at a company, at that time, they had an operations person. They had a few developers. They were overseas. They weren't exactly saying that they need HR. However, with how much hiring they were hoping to do in the next year, they were kind of combining recruitment and HR in like one bucket, right? And I think that's it's not a mistake, but it's something to be mindful of. Because if you're bringing an HR professional in, what exactly are they doing? So I would say, my sweet spot always has been like around employee 30, because when you have 30 employees, and especially if they're global, how are you keeping them all engaged? And how are you onboarding them? How are you taking care of them? How are you even recruiting? And so right now, I'm a fractional HR leader for a client that has about 46 employees. And I think that's a sweet spot because I'm still recruiting for them, right? So I'm still supporting them with the recruitment. They only have 2-3 roles open at the moment, and it's probably 2-3 roles every quarter. It's not a huge commitment from their end, so it's not a full-time hire, right? You can slowly kind of understand what type of HR needs they actually need, because sometimes they're like, oh, we need HR. But I think the board asked for HR. I don't actually know if we need HR. You know, the board of directors really thinks we lost 2 people within the last quarter. And so the board of directors is like, yeah, I think you should bring an HR person in now, because we had a turnover of 2, but the CEO hasn't bought it. You know, the CEO's like, we just got to do it to check the box. And I think that's the dangerous spot, is when you're an HR person, you come in, the CEO is like, we're just here to do a checkbox in, and like, you're not going to actually do much work. But the CEOs that are fully bought in at 46 employees, what I found was they would always add more to my plate. They'd be like, yeah, let's create an internship program. Yeah, let's get an employee handbook set up. You know, actually help us with the office move as well, because we want to do a whole remote office. We want to revamp that. Or internal communication cadences. We need to figure out, are we doing town halls or all hands? And can you do an HR audit for us? Like, can you just talk to everybody for us? Just make sure they're happy. And I think that's when I got the most value add, is around that mark. And you could get HR earlier, but I personally don't know if you fully need a full-time hire at that time. I think you need maybe a fractional support to help run your business from an operations, HR, recruitment, payroll, benefits. Let somebody take care of all of that fun stuff while the owners and the other business professionals or the executives are focusing on how to guys bring money in. Someone has to bring the money in. Someone has to deal with the back end. And as somebody now who is in that spot, it is very hard for me to balance client work, business development, marketing, finances. So I would have loved if somebody was like, let me just come in and just handle all your business development. So why not like alleviate some of that work and not have to pay a full-time salary out of that? So that's kind of my sweet spot.
And what about when we're talking about building culture? Because traditionally, you've always looked at HR to help build culture within a company. And if the world is different now, like the whole expansion of fractional, whether it's a CFO on the HR side, like there, we've seen a lot of great people go that route. And I think it's worked out well. And we've done that as well. But from a culture building standpoint, from your perspective, is that still possible without having that full-time in-house HR person?
I think it is possible. And at first, that was my concern as well. When I was in-house bringing somebody fractional, I was like, well, is it just going to be like a consultant that you can just Slack them or Teams them? And then like, they're not actually in office or they're not actually part of our all hands and whatnot. And I think setting that expectation is huge. Because for me, when I became fractional, I also, to be a strong consultant, a fractional HR leader, I need to be involved in the team. I need to be introduced to the team. I need the team to have communicated with me. And that's why I do the HR audits, right? Like, that's why I just talk to everybody on the team for the first month when I join. Yes, it's time consuming, you know, talking 15, 20 minutes with 50 employees. That's a good chunk of time, I won't lie, and it's a lot of conversation. Mm-hmm. But I'm reaping the rewards now. Like, I'm seeing people reaching out to me, be like, hey, like, I have to hire someone. I don't have time. Can you help me? And it's the team coming to me, not the executive coming to me, right? It's hiring managers coming to me. It's the employees coming to me being like, oh, I'm struggling with this conversation I have to have. And that's when I'm actually seeing my value add, is when I'm 100% embedded within the team. My capacity is limited. Don't get me wrong. I'm fractional. So I might be working 2 days a week. Totally okay. 2 days, it could be like spread. That's the role of the consultant. They have to determine how to meet their clients' needs with the time that they have, you know, and that's not the client's issue. Client just needs to get what they need to get from the consultant. And I think with how I've organized my time, and don't get me wrong, it is hard. Like, when you have clients, kind of, it's a lot of context switching. It's a lot of understanding. I might have a call on a Friday and I have to talk to an employee because it's important. And that's outside of my 2 days of work, but that's just what I've signed up for. And you know what? Even when I was in-house and I joined in-house as a head of people in different companies, my first responsibility was to talk to everybody on the team for 15, 20 minutes. And it could be odd, you know, from like the employee standpoint, be like, oh, HR wants to talk to me. But it depends on how you approach it, right? Like, I'm not going in being like, what's wrong with the company? I'm going in to be like, what do you do for fun? And how can I help you, right? It's 15 minutes. We're grabbing coffee. I might not talk to you in a couple of weeks, but you know that I'm here. You're very well aware that this is what's in my scope and I can help you when needed. I'm honestly, I've been with one of my clients for about, I think it's almost 2 months now. And after talking to people, I've already seen people just voluntarily reach out to me, which is the best feeling. It's the most fulfilling feeling from a consultant standpoint. I'm like, okay, at least they're reaching out to me externally, right? They've chosen to. It's not the executive coming to me being like, oh, this employee needs to talk to you. It's no, the employee's coming to me. And I think that helps build that relationship rather than feeling like, oh, I'm only supporting the leaders on the team or only the executives. I want to remove that stigma. HR is only supporting leaders and I want to be part of the employees as well. And I think when you look at a line, right, you look a line, you look at the leaders are here in the middle and HR is on one side and then employees are on the other side. And that's usually what we've been taught in the world of HR, right? HR takes the leaders and executive side. Whatever the leaders and executives are saying, HR is going to do that. And then employees are on the other side. I want HR to jump right in the middle, right? And HR is the one that's helping kind of connect employees and managers and helping with that conversation. It's not who's on whose side. It's who's moderating that conversation, who's helping employees feel safe. And that's kind of what my goal is as I go into companies, is I'm not trying to be on one or the other. I'm just trying to help bridge that communication and bridge that knowledge sharing between both sides.
So I want to go back to something you said earlier, because as soon as you said it, I thought, I'm going to ask about that. You mentioned potentially working for a CEO just to check the box. And I'm sure you must come across that quite often. You know, we need to introduce this, not because we really need it or want it, but because someone says we should do it. So we'll go through the process just so we can say we check the box. How do you deal with that?
It is the biggest challenge that I've faced personally and professionally when it comes to checking the box. Professionally, I would say that I think at the start of my career, I normalized it a little bit. I was like, okay, like, you do what they say. They know best. They say we have to create a DIB playbook. Okay, I'm going to do it. Or we have to put a line in our job descriptions that say that we are accessible because that's what people are saying. Okay, I'll do it. But I never questioned why. You know, I never actually said, oh, will people reach out? Or like, what are we doing with this playbook after? And I think it is a really uncomfortable thing to understand. And what I've realized in the last couple of years is I've been checking the box across many different things. And I think one of the things that's, it's very uncomfortable to admit it, but sometimes when you're going into a job and I wonder, like, when someone's hired you, like, oh, did I check all the boxes that you have, right? Like, did I recruit before at a startup? Or do I have Series A experience? And have I built playbooks and handbooks? And have I, whatever, right? But then I can't help but think, And this is like a very vulnerable thing to say, but I can't help but think they hire me because of like what I'm doing or that I'm brown. And that is a checkbox that they have. And it's okay. You know, like I completely understand it, but it is extremely uncomfortable when I go back. And it's interesting when I go back and I go home after an interview and I'll tell my husband's like, oh, how did the interview go? Like we all do, you know, we go back home, we tell our partners, they asked me this question, they asked me this question, this is how I felt. And my husband would be like, oh yeah, so you got the job. Like you made it sound like you got the job. And I was like, yeah, but if I was them, I don't think they asked me enough questions about myself. So I wouldn't hire myself. I think we had enough banter for them to hire me, but I don't think they know who I am. So it felt odd. And so when somebody hires me in that kind of situation, it feels like a checkbox. You know, it feels like, okay, did you hire me because I'm a woman? Or do you hire me because I'm like, I'm a person of color? And like, it is a delicate dance that I'm trying to kind of understand. And in the last year or two is when I realized like, I can't handle being that checkbox, whether it's a CEO telling me that we need to do this because it's a law or it's like a legal ask or, you know, it's a good thing to do. I've started questioning a lot more and I've gotten the confidence to question a lot more because I don't want to mold myself into that. I know what it's like to just check the box as a person who has been that person. I don't want to do it on the other side, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I just feel like I want to be more of a checkbox and I want to do more than just a checkbox for my job as well.
Yeah, it's funny that I'm glad I asked the question and I didn't ask it to go down the path that it did, but I'm glad that you brought that up because I don't think people necessarily realize that you might feel yourself that you're the checkbox. So bringing that up, I think that's a really important point.
Yeah. And I think it's the biggest thing is, you know, I understand the need of it. And I think I understand why founders want to showcase diversity on their leadership team, especially now. Like I totally get it, but I think it's sometimes it's just, how do we find that balance? How do you truly assess the person? And I think that's something that I'm really excited to push through and talk to CEOs and founders about. And also it is a little bit of like an internal confidence that I need to have in order to have those conversations. And I think now after my not even long career, but after going through some of the experiences that I've had, it's pushing me to ask those questions and seeing how my parents have handled it. I think my parents have been like one of the biggest source of inspiration when it comes to these things, because we moved from UAE, and my parents were in like their late 40s. And so when they moved, I was really young. I was like 12. When we moved here, my dad was an architect and my mom was a doctor. Very strong careers. And they had to restart when they came here because the credentials don't transfer over. And so watching them breaking through some of these like conversations and their barriers, like now I'm just like, I can't believe that they went through that. You know, like the conversations I hear on the dinner table of what somebody told them. And they would, especially my mother, like she would always like say, don't shrink yourself, don't blend in, like this is who you are, be proud. And I had a really hard time because again, I came when I was 12. So I was blending a lot more to the Canadian way of living and doing things. And I think figuring out how to have that balance is the most critical thing that I'm trying to still to this day do is, how do you figure out that you are a woman? Yeah. Okay. I know I am. Yeah. Call it fair to say it. I am. I know I'm brown. Okay. Great. I'm a mom. Okay. Great. But how can I go in and be like, yep, this is what I am. And like, this is what I'm going to bring to the table. And if it's a checkbox, it's a checkbox, but I will do it proudly. And I will kind of show you my other skills as well. So yeah, it's been an interesting challenge to say the least. A very hard one, but an interesting one.
And of course, the other possibility is that they just figure out that you're a good person and that you know what you're doing. That's always possible too.
Always possible. And I always have so much hope for that. I mean, that's how we recruit, right? That's how we hire. And like, the hope is that that's what it is across the board.
And I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is many, many times.
I hope so.
Well, Amna, you're early in your career with Pocket HR. Al and I and Joe, we're actually celebrating 20 years.
Whoa.
This July. And you know, I'm really happy to say I'm so excited. I probably say this every year, but I'm more excited than ever about the future. And to me, that's a sign of, number one, love what I do. Number two, love the people that I work with and chose great partners. But for you, sitting here just over a year in Pocket HR, clearly you've got some great things going on. Sounds like you've got some great clients. What are you excited about for the future? Like it can be AI, it can be what you're doing in HR, building cultures. What's exciting you right now?
Honestly, I love to say this. I am really excited about AI. And I know it's a very controversial topic in the world of HR. there are things I am worried about. What are they going to take from the world of HR? What are they going to change up? But I think with AI, and as I'm diving deeper into it and seeing kind of the benefit, especially as a business owner, I'm seeing how it's streamlining a lot of my day-to-day. I'm actively seeing how I'm able to handle all clients at the same time, being able to do business development, at the same time, able to seek out candidates. And it is actually amazing what AI is doing. What I'm excited about is how we are going to handle the change management of AI in HR. Change management is always hard in any company. It doesn't even have to be in HR, but you know, you bring in like an HR information system or you bring in like a new payroll platform and everyone struggles a little bit, and that's very normal. However, I think that with AI, it's going to be interesting in how they're going to connect all the different generations in the workplace and how all the different generations in the workplace are going to adopt AI in their own way, right? Like some may adopt it a little bit more and they might be more so on the advanced side. Some may be like, you know what? I actually just need it for recruitment. And I think there's so much opportunity. Like right now, an example I can immediately think of is, have either of you ever done campus recruitment or internship recruitment before?
I never have. Al's done a tiny bit, yeah.
Tiny little bit.
A little bit. I used to do that like as a full-time job at one of my previous companies. And it is unbelievable how many candidates and students you can get. Like thousands and thousands. We are going through thousands of resumes. Like unbelievable. And also, if you notice, all these universities, they go to their students at career centers and say, hey, this is the resume template. So all the resumes are looking exactly the same because they are the same template that I used when I graduated years and years ago. And so you're like, okay, your highlights, all right, your experience, okay, extracurricular activities, thank you, you were in this club, great. And so you know, and it's all important work, but I cannot guarantee that, okay, you get 1,000 resumes, you're going to go through 1,000 resumes for one intern role. And so for me, I'm thinking, isn't that a huge opportunity for us, like to bring in AI for campus recruitment as a whole, to help these campus recruiters, to help streamline. And if you can streamline, then maybe you have more capacity to bring on more interns, right? Because then it's not thinking like, oh, it's going to take us so long to hire one. It's like, no, but if you leverage technology, you might be able to bring 2 interns, 3 interns, 4 interns. So how can we flip the narrative that technology is actually going to make our lives harder, but actually saying like, no, technology will make it easier and it will allow you to scale in different ways that you probably never thought of. So I'm really excited about that. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about that because it's campus recruitment, it's students, and these are ways that we can streamline HR operations that we might have just not thought of, or we're just so busy that we have to think about the change management of how to bring the tool in. But once it's in, it's a game changer.
Well, I'm excited about it too. And I'm particularly excited for Monday because part of Al's task was to go out there and find out how we could implement more AI tools into our world. So I'll be asking him about that on Monday. So I'll just give him a bit of a warning now. So that's on my agenda for next week anyway, but I'm excited as well. Well, our first conversation was amazing. This one, it just continues to build and get better. And I feel like we're on a path to a good friendship and a great relationship. So I'm really happy about that. And I'm so glad we met. But it's a favorite time of the episode. I always love Al asking this question, and even better, I love hearing the answer. So if you're ready for it, Al has a signature question all ready and queued to go.
Wonderful. So here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So maybe it's through Pocket HR, where you're helping businesses create people-first cultures. Maybe it's something you're doing personally or in other lines of your professional work. But what proverbial trees are you planting?
I can think of 2. So the first one would be generational understanding. And I mentioned this a couple times, but I think right now we're at a time where there's 4 generations in a workplace. That's a lot. You know, I saw how my dad adapted to COVID versus how I adapted to COVID. I saw the differences. I understood how parents adapted to COVID versus someone in their early 20s adapted to COVID. And I don't know how yet. So, you know, I'm hoping that the more I talk about it, I'm hoping that helps create that level of understanding. But I really want to create more conversation around having more understanding with just generations in the workplace, understand how different generations learn, how different generations handle different situations like parenting and all of that. Like when I joined, I remember there was somebody at work who was an expecting mother and she had gestational diabetes. So she had to do kind of the injections. I didn't know what that was. I was like, why are you putting injections in your body every time we're eating lunch? Like, I don't understand what's going on. And it made me just think about how so many people have different ways of living and how so many people have different ways that they worked before 10, 15, even 2 years ago. And if I'm going to be an HR leader and support all these staff, I have to have a level of understanding to know that it's not a one size fit all across everybody. You really have to be mindful of what the person needs and how they will engage in the workplace. So that's my first one. And I am studying on it too. So I'm doing my master's of adult education purely just so I can understand that. And it's just, I'm really, really passionate about it. The second thing is I really hope that people consider, you know, like lifestyle living and thinking about how they're designing their lives and like how can they engage their workplace to help them design their life. And I know it's not always easy. You know, I know that sometimes owners and founders have their own way of working, but I do think that there is a way that we can all design our lives in a way that works for us and not the other way around. So like, for example, picking up your children from daycare. I actually didn't even know this, okay? But I kind of did when I was in school. School ends around 3:30, right? Most children, elementary school. I always wondered, what do parents do? Do you leave work at 3:30 and then go pick up your kid and then go home? And are you back at work at 3:30? Like, and to this day, I still don't know the answer. I will when my son goes to school. But are you comfortable enough to go to your manager and say that? What if your manager doesn't understand that and says like, no, well, like you need something to be done at 5 o'clock. And so I just want to have more of those conversations and just highlight that you are able to design your life. The more you communicate with your people and the more as employers, you are understanding the different generations and different life stages your employees are in. So I'm hoping I can bring that into conversation the more and more I talk about it.
Well, I love that you, and you said it a few times, you used the word in there, understanding. I mean, it sounds like that is one of the key things for you is really just to understand other people and what their needs are and how you can help them. And I think that's a great answer and it's really important. It's probably something we need more of these days. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome. That's a great question. Really got me thinking.
Well, this has been fantastic. For listeners who are interested in learning more about what you're doing, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
I'm a LinkedIn queen. Message me on LinkedIn anytime. Amna Koskin, or obviously my website is www.pockethr.ca. But yeah, thank you. This was amazing. I absolutely loved learning about you both. Loved just having this conversation.
Well, this was amazing. Again, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. Remember, we saw it here today. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time, my friends.